just leave us here?
Okay, that's fine.
Over here. You're next, sir, and then I think the guy behind you had his hand in the air. You want to speak, sir? Did you want to speak?
Yeah.
You're next. Go ahead.
Good evening. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. I did not go to Virginia Tech. I'm a proud Mountaineer.
I didn't either. Don't worry about it.
West Virginia University. I appreciate the discussion about noise abatement because my primary concern, excuse me, is I think we're kind of Groundhog Day. We talked about this before. What constitutes a superior design? And right now, as the ordinance stands, it's somewhat nebulous. It's subjective. So I'm trying to understand what would make this particular subdivision superior. It has buffers, but they're already mandated, whether it's a cluster subdivision or not. So I met with the engineers, and we had a nice discussion about potential ways to promote groundwater or stormwater infiltration so we do not pave over and destroy the natural function of groundwater infiltration. The best groundwater infiltration you can have is under forest vegetation. So I would promote and advocate that you really reconsider the subdivision plan because it does still contain a significant amount of forest reduction. So I'm not naive to think that you're actually going to deny these people their ability to develop this piece of land in perpetuity. However, you do have the discretion and you have a mandate as to why you even exist, and that is to protect the natural features of the county, people's safety, and of course, the integrity of our natural resources. An excavated stormwater management infiltration basin does not clean water. As a matter of fact, it's a conduit for contaminants into the shallow groundwater because you are lowering the elevation, the natural elevation, to within literally feet of where the water table is. Whereas forest vegetation, you have interception, you have the duff layer, the good doctor spoke about lead, chelation. You can't find a better chelation mechanism than the organic matter under forest vegetation. So I think if the developer and their associates really give some consideration, they could make a very fine subdivision by maintaining as much of the forest as they possibly can, using it for passive open space, using it for groundwater infiltration, walking trails. And I'm sure a few of y'all grew up playing in the woods. You remember what that was like, right? So I would think it would be a great amenity for any young kids to have a place they can go, run around, make forts, and really enjoy Mother Nature. By the way, I'm a retired wildlife biologist from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and I'm a certified professional soil scientist, so I think I can speak to some credibility. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your relevant credentials there. Indeed. Yes, sir. Come on up.
Howdy, folks. Can you hear me?
Sure can. And your name is?
My name is Joe Larimore. I live at 15159 Hudson Road,
okay,
right next to the airport. I'm on the airport grounds.
Okay.
I wanted to just rebuttal the road count thing she mentioned.
Okay.
I live there. Every morning at 6 o'clock, I get up. I watch truck after truck after truck, construction people, Atlantic Concrete, different ones, electric companies, plumbing,
right,
heading down my road. There's probably about 15 developments going on down that way. And on weekends, forget it. If there's an accident especially, I cannot get out of my house. I have to sometimes drive through the field in the backyard to Eagle Crest Road. Every morning when I want to go to work in Milford, I never go to the right out of my driveway to go Hudson Road to Route 1. I go the other way, all the way around Eagle Crest Road, and I cross over there. It's a lot safer, a lot less congested. There's always 10 or 15 cars stacked up there. They're all the way by the the Round Bridge Pole Road. So those people are going to be really screwed of trying to get out of there until they do something with a, we need a red light badly, but the highway department is, I don't know what the heck's wrong with those guys. When that 16 light leaves us, you're going to be able to drive from Five Points to Canada without stopping. There won't be in a red light. That's the last red light, really. Think about it.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Julie, come on up.
Do I have the, thank you. Hi, my name's Julie, 22483 Ridge Circle. I have nothing to say about aviation. I have some questions, and it's basically from the packet, online packets that I read. But unlike you, who have to read thousands of pages for each meeting, I just pick up a few pages and come up with my own arguments. So one of the things that I had questioned about Ed Lene was when he first showed the map of the Zone A, Zone B, right. In my opinion, or in my understanding, Zone A is 50 feet and it is not negotiable. But when I looked at the map, there are certain areas that are wider, certain areas are thinner. So I don't understand how that could be Zone A.
Never less than 50.
Well, and I can answer this too. Okay. So we, and this is, I was gonna mention this later. Because this is kind of the first one that the commission's seen that has to comply with the resource buffer requirements. We had one that was voluntary a while back.
Yep.
This one has to comply. I suggested that we send it through Mr. Whitehouse's office and County Engineering's office. They reviewed it, and as a result of that, there's a staff memo from Mr. Whitehouse based on input from engineering that says it complies with the resource buffer requirements. So, I mean, I think that answers the question.
Okay. All right.
And that's an independent review from our staff.
Yes. So, I'm basically here because it was withdrawn and all the public comments from previous application was gone. And when I saw that, I thought, you know, maybe I have something to say. So that's why I'm here. And I think that's procedurally unfair because, you know, many people may not feel like they want to submit the comment again. So maybe you could look at that as a procedure in the future. And I was happy to see that there was a mention of the ecological network map. That's Exhibit 16, as we saw earlier. And it was mentioned in page 19 of the booklet. And in there, as we have heard from Mackenzie earlier, there is important, ecologically important areas. But then some areas have been cleared in late 60s for the road project, and they are not considered old growth. But even though it may not be since 1937, they are at least like 50 years old. And in this town, 50 years old trees are really old when we consider all those little saplings that we are planting nowadays. And then it has to be cleared because of the safety hazard and intermittent water retention they have. So I was wondering where this borrow pit was, but in the Exhibit 16, there was no delineation or demarcation of the borrow pit and also the subdivision. So I tried to see as much as I could. So I got this Delaware Ecological Network blow up, and on the side is the in context of the whole region. And then I overlaid the borrow pits, and as I overlay, the colors get dimmer. So this is the borrow pit area here. And then when I overlay the subdivision, this whole area is the Delaware Network environmental network core area. This whole thing is cut down because the borrow pits are conveniently there. And the construction noises and the vibration could disrupt the animals and the marine life. And that's all in this area. So this is how it looks like over the satellite image. So the subdivisions over here will all be without the existing forests. And the next question I have is about TIS. I looked at the page 26 that has crash data, and the crash data was taken March 2019 through March 22. That was like during the slow time. And
Ms.
then,
Lee, Dell.Dot already testified that they didn't use information from
I prepared this one before I heard that.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And then it says the crash data within 0.1 mile radius. And I looked up, it's 528 feet. My driveway is 170 feet. My neighbor's driveway is 650 feet. I don't know why the crash data is looked at only within 0.1 mile radius of the intersection. And then I think the TIS is not adequate. The increased vehicle impact is not all about numbers. It's not all about LOS or ADT that we hear so much about. And driving on the Round Pole Bridge and Savannah Road will be a totally different experience because their underlying conditions are different. So I think this TIS or even the scoping fail to recognize there are no intersection to do the intersection analysis. But there are at least five 90 degree bends, and those bends come with the risks. They are not considered. And then the terrain and the road condition. You know, the roads are narrow. It's not about the number of cars going by. It's about, you know, what kind of condition they are driving about. And then there are wildlife. And during the crash data period, November 1st, 2021, there was a personal injury due to the deer. And that is from the public crash data available. And then here I see Delaware Route 54 in the TIS, and I was wondering where that was. You see that? So why is this in this TIS? And I looked at the current volume versus the increase. What does the 16% translate to in regards to the increase? So 16% eastbound and 16% westbound. And then the peak hour from Twin Mass to Milton would be this, and then back and forth. Eastbound from Milton this way, from Milton to Hudson is this number, and Milton to Twin Mass is this, and then the future would be almost 300%. But when I looked at the AM peak hours, Hudson to Milton, Twin Mass to Milton, so this is the increase, you look at the AM number going from 0 to 22. Why? Why are there so many suddenly, there used to be 0, now it's 22. Are they going to school or work? And this is the kind of increase that we don't talk about. And when something is increased from 0, no matter what that number is, it's an infinite increase. 0 to 1 is infinite, math-wise. And then turning. This is also from that TIS report. When turning from Hudson North right turn, that's the number here. Peak hour is 7. Going the other way, peak hour is 2. And then when you turn from Hudson to Round Pole Road, that is the same thing. I will just go through this. Oh, sorry. This is about the heavy trucks. Going this way or this way from Hudson Road, there's no truck at all. No heavy truck, zero, zero. Zero heavy truck. Why is that? And then the intersection of pedestrian. There are no pedestrian either, all zero. So why is that? Maybe the road is not safe. But the next four screens I just bypassed because they were the same. And here, the several infrastructure improvement projects are in the area, and we heard about some of those, and some dates go to 25 or 28. And the traffic situation is bad during the road improvement period. You know, as somebody said, if there's a flagger, many cars may be routed to Round Pole area. Construction cannot coincide with the road improvement, especially in this area. And until all the improvements are in place, the heavy construction or logging vehicles should not be allowed in this area. So that was it for me. And I have a few other questions. The borrow pit. It's a temporary one, but it has to be filled. And when they fill, they will have to bring in heavy equipment to compact the filled area. That means more heavy traffic volume there. And I think we need to reconsider DelDOT MOU to think about the road conditions, not just the numbers and the LOS. And if you approve this one, there may be more people traveling to Georgetown to attend the planning and zoning meeting or council meeting, so please consider that too. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I have to tell you, I don't think threatening is effective. I really don't, because I've been doing this a long time, and I don't have to be anywhere until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, so I'll stay out of time.
We love public engagement, too.
Yeah. Sir.
Hi, good evening, everybody. My name is Peter Caltagirone. I own Lot 16 Hudson Road in the Eagle Crest Aerodrome. Probably one of your newest property owners in Sussex County. I'm an attorney from Alaska. I own a law firm there. About a third of my practice is aviation law. I'm a panel attorney with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. I'm a board member of the Alaska Airmen's Association. And I say, I bring that up because I regularly practice in front of the FAA, I regularly practice in front of the NTSB, and I'm very familiar with a lot of the advocacy efforts that AOPA and other similar organizations have undertaken for a lot of the issues that we're talking about tonight. As a personal note, graduate from Villanova Law, and that's many moons ago, but it was when I was a law student at Villanova that I first started coming down and spending time with friends in Milton, going to the beach, and really realized at that point what a special community this is. And it was something I knew maybe someday when I could afford it, I wanted to be a part of this community. And part of that introduction to this community was the fact that my friends down here lived right next to the Eagle Crest Aerodrome. And I said, you know what? That is the perfect kind of community where I'd like to retire someday. last year, my friend who's a realtor in town sent me a listing of a house that rarely comes up for sale. Looked at it, I said, it's a little bit early. Networked in the community, ended up finding a beautiful piece of the land. And we're several thousands of dollars in at this point, architectural plans to eventually build a hangar home and add to the community. So why is all that relevant? There's a lot of flying communities around the United States, but I chose this community because it's very special. And, you know, I love the vibe of Sussex County. I love the fact that it's rural, but it's still close to Philadelphia, where I spent so much of my career before I moved to Alaska. It's close to DC. It's really the best of all worlds. And I can't wait to be here, and I can't wait to provide my small investment in the community. I'm going to be taking the Delaware Bar Exam in February and eventually shifting my law practice here. But through a lot of my advocacy efforts with AOPA, I understand that small airports around the country, and the aviation expert could probably testify to this, are under attack and get closed regularly for exactly the issues that we're talking about tonight, specifically as it relates to noise and proximity to the airport. And what's most important to me as we go through this process, and I submitted some written comments as well, not a NIMBY, you know, development is, it has both positives and negatives, but, you know, other people have the right to come to this community and have an affordable home to live in addition as me. So not opposed to the development in principle. What's most important to me is recording something that runs with the land, that that protects our airport in the future. It's an important part of this community's history, and it's going to be an important part of this community's future. And what our attorneys at our HOA's expense have proposed to the developer to that end, more so than what could appear in declarations or CC&Rs, which can be amended at any time by a certain percentage of the homeowners. What's most important is something that runs with the land, a permanent easement that protects our ability to maintain our airport in the future. And that's been negotiated, and that's been drafted up, and those attorney's fees have already been spent. And that's all it's gonna cost the developer. I had plans to fly my airplane down next month. I moved that up when I heard about this meeting, similar to one of the individuals that testified earlier. I flew my airplane from Alaska, landed here yesterday, and gonna keep my airplane here over the winter. But anyway, I ask that this board take that into consideration and help this airport survive moving forward. Thanks.
All right, sir. Thank you. Yes, sir. Come on up. You're going to tell us something new, right?
Absolutely.
Well, now, wait a minute now. We've already seen that video once. I want you to come up here and tell me what you're going to tell me. We've seen that video.
I'd like to be able to show you what I'm talking about.
Well, why don't you tell us, and then we'll decide.
I will. Thank you very much. Great. My name is John Chertia. I live at 29633 Eagles Crest Road. That's in Eagles Crest Homeowners Association. I currently am a pilot, and I serve as president of the Eagle Crest Homeowners Association. And I thought maybe it would be time to bring you a little bit of reality of somebody flying out of Eagle Crest Aerodrome. And if there's any way you can put this up, I'd like to show you a real life situation of what happens, of what can happen. There you go. Okay, let me ask you to stop it shortly here. Run it a little bit more. Right there. Excellent. If you look down the runway, you'll take it up just a little bit more. Take it up another stop. Excellent. That shows you straight on the flight path going out of Eagle Crest Aerodrome. The first property you see there, you know what it is, it's Pintail Point. It's 39 units that are off to the left there, and there's a path through Pintail Point. That path was created, I don't know how long ago, you probably know better than I do, but probably 25, maybe 30 years ago that community, maybe less than that, that it was created. And when they created that, the gentleman who just spoke, Joe Larimore, was president of the association. And what he did is he met with the developer, he met with planning and zoning, and they decided to keep that open area that you're looking at right there. It's in excess of 100 feet. Beyond that, you'll see a vacant lot. It's a farmland. And then beyond that, the lighter complexion field is Twin Mast subdivision, proposed subdivision, 249, all within the flight path of Eagle Crest Aerodrome. So the real life story that I'd like to tell you about, I've been flying for 68 years. I've been flying out of Eagle Crest for about half of that time. In that time, I've flown this path right here many, many times. One morning, my daughter Heather, is a pilot as well. We were taken off in my gyroplane. If you know what a gyroplane is, it's with the big wing up, or big propeller up on top, and it looks like a cross between a helicopter and a grasshopper. Well, it's called a gyroplane. We were taken off right here. For some reason, I don't know what the reason was, Heather doesn't either, we landed in right where that little white shed is, we landed in that area right there. And we landed there, we call it an off-field landing. But that's where we ended up, right in there. If that subdivision had not been planned by you and the developer and the Eagle Crest Homeowners Association, there would have been more houses in there. And you would have seen a newscast featuring a burning gyroplane like one of those houses that you saw a little bit earlier. So this, where we are right now, this is not a negotiation between the developer and us. It's our plea to you to do the right thing. And the right thing is to give us a path through there. There right now, there's a pickleball court in there and planning and parking lots and also utility infrastructure. So that's strictly up to you. You're going to make a decision of what goes forward. I wish you luck in that decision because it's a tough one. But as Paul, if you're young enough or old enough to remember Paul Harvey, he would always end up by saying, and that's the rest of the story. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. Very nice. Thanks. Okay. Okay. Who's next? All the way over here. Let's go on this side. Now, we'd like to hear something a little different.
You know, I don't have anything new, but I just wanted to say I'm opposed. Mark Nardi, I live on Round Pole Bridge Road for the last 24 years.
Okay.
I'm opposed to the development, mostly on the basis of the road and what I see as a flawed traffic in TIS, the study.
All right.
Due to lapses in the data tables are incomplete. You know, okay. So that's all.
All right, sir. Thank you. Okay, who's next? Yes, sir. Come on up here. Something different.
Yeah, I got a comment about something I saw on a slide tonight.
All right.
My name is Charlie Quant, and I live on Hudson Road.
Okay.
And I'm a pilot, and I have an airplane in my hangar, and so I don't want to talk about any of that. What I see is my concern is all the traffic on Hudson Road, and Joe Larimore pointed out about all the construction trucks.
Yep.
All spring we had logging trucks going up there all day long, and then in the evening they all came back. But what I saw on the slide tonight, maybe one of the engineers can address. At the last hearing, they talked about restricting access out of the subdivision onto Round Pole Road with a right turn only. And if that happened, that means everybody coming out of all those, I don't know how many trips a day would they talked about? Yeah, would have to go to Milton, basically, or go down there somewhere and U-turn and come back. But that would keep them off Hudson Road, so that's a good thing for me. So, and where I saw it tonight was on the, when you're talking about the two wells and the sewage treatment facilities.
I'm going to ask you to face this way, sir. You need to direct your comments to us. If we think they need to be asked something, we'll ask them. You go ahead.
Right. So they had a little picture. He was explaining where the utilities were, the sewage treatment or something like that, the two wells. And if you looked at, there was a median in the exit there showing all the traffic. It was that feature they talked about. Somebody had mentioned it. The last meeting, they were as a ways to mitigate the traffic down at Round Pole Bridge and Hudson Road, the people trying to go out to Route 1, they said they would restrict it all the way, just a right turn only. Okay. So is that still in the plan? That's my question.
Well, we'll get a clarification on that, but I suspect DLDOT's probably had their way with them by now, and whatever's on the plan's probably what DLDOT wants them to do.
Well, that was on the plan tonight.
We'll find out, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. You want to respond to that, Mr. Erickson?
Sure.
Real quick, please, to clarify.
Sure. I believe what he saw is a channelized right turn lane. So what that does is basically allows for a channelized right turn lane instead of an open one. It is not restricting movements in the other direction.
Okay, thank you. Yes, sir.
Jamie, would you do me a favor? Could you bring up that very first graphic of twin mast? It's like an aerial photo with the overlay on it. In the meantime, my name is John Doran. I live at the corner of Eagle Crest and Hudson Road. I'm a pilot. My testimony is going to take about 30 seconds, but it's going to be the best one you've heard tonight. As soon as we get the picture up.
I think you're running, sound like you're running for office.
Perfect, that's it. Okay. Right where the black box is on the bottom, it says solutions.
Yeah.
That is the end of our runway. This development is too close to the runway. If you look at the gap on the left, it has a blue-colored pond, some buildings, another blue-colored pond. That's supposed to be the runway protection zone. So we're taking off under that black box. We're supposed to crash land through curbs and gutters, ponds, clubhouses, parking lots, pickleball courts, and then we get to the second runway protection zone. Whoopee. That's all I want to say. We need common sense here.
That was 45 seconds.
Okay, who's next? All the way in the back. Yes, ma'am. Come on up. Okay, we've heard all about the planes crashing in the subdivision. We've heard about traffic. We've heard about lead. Tell me something different.
Tell me something different. I'm Pamela Rizzo. I live directly beside where the development is.
Okay.
My concerns are the mature forest at the back and along the wetlands towards the left-hand side that go down towards Broadkill. Right. When I built my lot, my house on that lot, it was pure sand. But when they start digging and they start compacting, I today have areas that are so compacted that they will not drain, they won't grow grass, they won't do much of anything. And I spend a fortune trying to get grass and everything else. That's a concern. The other concern is when you put that many houses into one spot and then you take out all the trees and everything, nothing aesthetically is appealing about that. I built my house 15 years ago. It was a wooded lot, just like what's right behind me. I only took out what the footprint of my house was. And that's strictly all there is. Do I pay a fortune cleaning up leaves every year? Yes, I do. And I clean up branches every time it storms on that. I admit they're a mess. But I have more wildlife than probably most any development. And when you go into Lewis and you see deer crossing into the middle of town, you realize we should be protecting our forest. We as a county have taken out more forest than any other place around in Delaware. In Delaware. And we continually keep doing it. We're destroying our groundwater because a lot of the developments have been destroyed their groundwater because they put the developments in and whoever's around them loses their wells. I live where I live because I did not want to live in a development. I wanted to be in control of my water. I wanted to be in control of what I paid for my property. Meaning, if I take care of it, I spend as much as you all do on homeowners' fees. But I take care of it because it's my individual property. I knew they would develop what was next door to me, but I never dreamed, as I said before, that anybody would do what they're doing to that piece of property. And with trying to put in that many houses, my request is this. I want at least 100 feet away from my mature forest that surrounds my house, surrounds the back of it, and I would think that every property owner that's in that end of Round Pole Bridge would request the same thing. Stay away from the roots of our trees. I have branches that go out at least 50 feet, and we all know you have to protect out to that extent. The other thing I requested is that there is a 6-foot aesthetically pleasing fence put around this development into the back of us if they're planning on tearing down those beautiful trees to the back of us because of sound, because of noise, and because of dirt. I've put up with dirt for years from the farms, but they only do it when they're planting or harvesting, and that's it, and I thank you.
Yes, ma'am, thank you. Okay, who's next? Going once, twice. Don't feel obligated. I mean, it's okay.
I'm not. Hello. Again, my name is Judy Rose Seibert. I still reside in Lewis. And Some of this you've already seen, but I'm just going to pass it, this out because there's one page that I want to draw your attention to. So we've already talked about what amount of the Delaware Ecological Network that this subdivision will impact. And those are the first three pages. What I'd like to draw your attention to is the last page, which shows a greater view of the Delaware Ecological Network and how many subdivisions have been built and have impinged on that network. These are the wildlife corridors. So I just want you to consider that this additional development will further impinge and degrade the Delaware environmental network. What else did I want to say? I guess I can't think of it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyone else? We almost made it. Okay. Anyone else like to speak? Commissioners, anyone else have any questions?
I do have something. Maybe it's from council.
Go ahead.
So when I was reading through the conditions that the developer is proposing before the meeting, and then tonight the gentleman was speaking on behalf of the Eagles Crest and saying that he wanted P, Q, and R. The R is one that stuck out in my mind. The developer shall permanently restrict a portion of the site approximately 100 feet in width by approximately 2,000 feet in length for development of any and all improvements except for amenity facilities, utility structure, including fencing, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that it should say if it's for them except for, because then we're going to have obstructions.
That's the point.
Had people testify tonight that they, you know, we're talking about putting pickleball courts there. So is it okay to hit somebody playing pickleball rather than slam it into a house? I don't think that's how that should be read.
I can explain. So based off the information that we actually submitted into the record on the email correspondence and all the back and forth with David Hutt, who represents Eagle Crest, and John Pardee, who represents Hudson, we came up with this particular condition R because the primary concern, as it was explained to us, was actually the first 100 by 1,000 feet area. And on the RDA 1 area, that is where we actually only proposed below or at grade improvements. And that's why the RDA 1 area is much more restrictive than the RDA 2 area. And based off of our professional, Mr. Lamb, we actually didn't have to do anything. However, we voluntarily provided for this 100 by 2,000 feet area. So the RDA 1 area is actually in this area, and it is noted there's a RDA plan that is in the record. It shows the restricted development area 1 and restricted development area 2.
So can I ask a question too? Because I think I had the same question as you and Mackenzie when you went through it. I was looking at there was a prior set of conditions. Was R the
this
one?
This was amended.
Yeah, there was an updated one that goes
into that. As of the
26th,
it was amended. And so there was.
I looked at it on the screen. I didn't print it out, but there's
one. Yeah, so that may be the confusion, but we actually submitted, I believe it was the 25th specifically to the county, and it was, we were amending that language to address some of Eagle Crest's concerns.
Doesn't reference A or B or whatever.
Yeah, I had the same question. And the other thing is that the commission can impose its own condition. Anyway.
Right. Yeah,
that's true. But
I was trying to consider what the homeowners were.
Yeah.
So the homeowners told us what they would like, and then we amended condition R specifically in response to one of the most recent emails we had received from Eagle Crest. And that's when we broke down the area into RDA 1 and RDA 2 and did specific exceptions for both areas after we understood that the very important area, the area they were most concerned about from our understanding, was a 100 foot by 1,000 foot area. And there were exceptions in that area as provided in the updated copy. And that is posted on the county's website.
Thank
and
you.
Submitted into the record.
All right, thank you.
Were there any other questions?
I'm going to ask a radical question.
Sure.
You
can ask
it. What would the development look like, and how many units would you fit in it if you accommodated what's being requested? in terms of providing for an emergency landing zone.
So we already moved six lots, I believe, into.
Accommodated all of the concerns about removal of forest development in the forest area. What do you end up with?
I need my engineer.
I think it's okay.
An approximation.
So yeah, it's a very, very difficult approximation. I mean, it would crush your land area basically. And so I will say, I know when I lined up that open space, I did it very particularly. Part of it is because when you start expanding more than that and squishing everything else, you can't really fit like an extra road in there. So you can't like efficiently kind of get the lots and get the stormwater and do all the superior design items in as meaningful of a way as far as stormwater recharge when it comes to the BMPs.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else, commissioners?
Just a suggestion, because I know we're gonna take a break.
Yep.
And there's a whole lot of people here. You might wanna refer back to this one, because I suspect it's gonna get deferred.
Yeah, I think what we're gonna do, folks, is we are going to vote on this, but we're not going to vote on it. We're going to defer action so that you're not waiting around to see what we're going to do. Because what we normally do is we have 7 more public hearings, believe it or not. Okay, so we usually get through our public hearings and then we refer back and we act on each one of them. Most of the time we defer action. I can tell you that's what's going to happen. So we're gonna go ahead and do that now so that you won't be worrying about it, okay? So, I don't have to close the public hearing first. Yeah, I think I do, yeah. Okay, now, if you'll just bear with me for a second, okay? Because we're gonna close the public hearing and you're gonna take that as the signal to get up and run away and then there will be all this noise, okay? Give me 90 seconds, okay? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing. I thank all of you for being here. You were remarkably well behaved, even though I had to yell at you 2 or 3 times. But you guys were great. You were patient. I'm sorry the process is what it is, but you know, it is what it is. So thank you all for being here. We'll close the public hearing.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we defer action on 2022-06 Twin Masts for further consideration.
I second.
Perfect. Okay, it's been moved and seconded to defer action on subdivision 2023-06 Twin Masts to give the commission sufficient time to consider all the testimony placed on the record this evening. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carried. Thank you. We stand in recess until 8:57.